March, Year of God, 894. 1. HMS Dancer, 56, off the Theremin Peninsula, Southern Ocean. It was cool on deck, despite the bright sunlight, as the brisk easterly wind pushed HMS Dancer steadily westward in a wind hum of rigging and the wash and bubble of water around the hull. The galleon was on very nearly her best point of sailing, with the wind coming in just abaft the starboard quarter, and with all sail set to the royals, she was making almost 10 knots. That was a very respectable turn of speed for any galleon, even one only 2 months out of port. Of course, like every galleon in the Imperial Carisian Navy, Dancer was copper-sheathed below the waterline. It protected her from both the borers, which all too often devoured a ship's timbers without anyone noticing, until her bottom fell out, that was, and from the weed, which killed her speed as well. Nothing could completely stop a ship's bottom from growing steadily fouler, but Dancer's copper gave her a tremendous advantage. It was going to make her faster than most ships she might meet, even as far away from home as the Gulf of Dolar. Still, she could have done a bit better than her present speed if she'd been sailing by herself. Admiral Sir Gwilym Manthier thought as he paced steadily back and forth along the railed walkway, which stretched the full width of her stern. Ships sailing in company were always slower than they might have been sailing alone, because every sailing vessel was unique. Each had her own best point of sail. Even sister ships from the same dockyard, as alike as two peas to the human eye, took wave and wind differently, made their best speeds under slightly different conditions. A captain who knew his ship as well as Captain Rafe McGale knew Dancer could wring the very best performance out of his command in any given wind and sea, but when ships sailed in company, they were limited to the best speed of the slowest vessel under whatever conditions currently applied. That thought was one which had been largely academic when Manthier had commanded HMS Dreadnought, then Prince Caleb's flagship. Despite the fact that Dreadnought had been a fleet flagship, Manthier's responsibilities hadn't included deciding what that fleet was going to do next, or worrying about how long it was going to take all of its ships to get from one point to another. Of course, he wasn't a mere flag captain any longer. He'd lost Dreadnought at Darkos Sound, a memory which still brought him intense pain, and not simply because of how much he loved that ship. He'd lost her, in the end, because he deliberately rammed her into a Coruscantian galley, under all the sail she could carry. Even though she'd struck bows on, she'd been traveling too fast at the moment of impact, and he'd split her seams wide open. He'd managed to stave in a good 20 feet of her hull planking as well, inflicting far too much damage below the waterline for her crew to save her, desperately though they'd tried. He'd known well before she struck that he was going to do potentially fatal damage, too. But that wasn't the reason the memory hurt so much, no. No, it hurt so much because, even so, he'd been too late. Because, despite all he and his crew had been able to do, and he knew without doubt that they'd done everything humanly possible, they'd been 10 minutes too late to save their king's life. Gwilym Manthier would have sent a dozen galleons to the bottom in return for those 10 minutes. He realized he'd stopped pacing, that he was standing with his hands on the sternwalk rail, staring back across Dancer's wake. He looked out over the vast expanse of the Southern Ocean and gave himself a shake. The only person in the world who blamed him for being too late was himself, and he knew that too. His knighthood and his promotion from captain to admiral would have been proof enough of that, even without his current assignment. His was the most distant of all of Karras's far-flung squadrons. He was 2 months out from the great naval base at Lock Island, with 18 war galleons, 6 schooners, and no less than 30 transports. And wind and weather had favored him quite unreasonably. Indeed, he was the better part of 2 5-days ahead of his originally projected passage time, some 100 miles south of the Theremin Peninsula, rounding up around the southern end of the continent of Howard to pass through the Gosset Passage between Westbreak Island and the western tip of the enormously larger island called the Barren Lands into the Harthian Sea. That put him 9,000 miles from Lock Island, but that was in a straight line, and ships couldn't just fly through the air. To reach this point, Manthir's squadron had been forced to sail over 15,000 miles, and they still had almost 5,000 to go. At such a vast distance from any of his superiors, Manthir was entirely on his own, which was a pretty conclusive statement of his superior's trust in him and his judgment, however he looked at it. After all, he had only the resources aboard his own ships, plus whatever he could liberate, and no one to turn to for orders or directions.